Now, let's return to the Bob Woodson Show, What Works and Why, on TalkZone.com.
This is Bob Woodson again, and you're listening to the Bob Woodson Show, What Works and Why. We're talking about the financial crisis among low-income and middle-income Americans and what some people are trying to do to help them. Our first guest has been Loretta Abrams, Senior Vice President of HSBC Bank. And now we're joined by Mr. Charles Perry, the Director of the Center for Neighbor Enterprises Financial Literacy Education Program. Welcome, Mr. Perry.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. How are you doing today?
Good. Tell us something about your work in relation to HSBC Bank. Ms. Abrams talked about the bank's commitment to helping people, and according to the numbers we had here, you have enjoyed a long history with HSBC Bank. Tell us about your efforts to carry out some of these very interesting programs.
Certainly. Back in 2003, we started out with a base of 11 organizations working with then Household International to put forth 20 workshops and a pilot, and we were working with grassroots organizations who knew their communities and knew their communities well, and they were able to reach out and market to their communities, people that they knew, people who belonged to various churches, civic associations, were residents of various housing properties, and invited folks to come into a workshop where they would share information about basic financial literacy. And since that time, the base has grown to 30 organizations, and they are doing a great job out there.
Walk me through this. Now, your goal is to reach what population, low-income and middle-income people?
Yes, sir.
What is the best way to reach them? Do you work with local organizations? How do you do outreach? You live in Washington, right?
Yes, yes.
And you're coming to a city like Akron, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
Walk us through what do you do when you, first of all, what makes you decide to go to Akron? And then what happens when you make that decision? Walk me through how do you do
sure.
Connections Workshop.
First of all, HSBC has a list of designated states that they would like for us to work in.
Mm-hmm.
And we call these states the Community Reinvestment Act assessment areas. And once we understand what those assessment areas are and the cities and the counties that are involved, we look to see who are first within our database to see if any of the partners are affiliated with us in the beginning, such as the case in Akron, where Mr. Gary Wyatt, and he brought us out ministry, was already a part of our network. And we extended the invitation to Gary and his wife, Patricia, to join us as we wanted to reach out to people who they serve, typically people who earn less than $30,000. More of the folks have high school diplomas or less. Most of the people are women as opposed to men. And so those folks, such as Gary and Patricia, know their populations very well, and they're able to connect with them through flyers, word of mouth, community bulletin boards, picking up the phone and calling the neighbor and say, listen, we have a financial literacy event going on 2 weeks from now. Will you join us? And so most of the organizations start with people that they know, and one person leads us to another person. Before you know it, we have a community of ambassadors who alert others that there's a financial literacy workshop going on in the community.
Well, our next guest talks about talk about even reaching people who are incarcerated. Is this unusual for a financial literacy program to be inclusive of people like this?
Yes and no. Yes, it's unusual. If you look at certain modules that we present, you know, you would say, well, we should protect, you know, the general population from folks who are incarcerated. But at the same time, people incarcerated earn an income to some degree. And we work with folks who are incarcerated to prepare for transitioning back into society by working with them to understand what it is to, first and foremost, as Mrs. Abrams said, to check your credit score, to understand what this credit score is, to look at ways to become banked. What a lot of our friends who are incarcerated experience is that they have their identity stolen by family members or someone who knows that they are incarcerated and out of circulation, and they find out how their Social Security number is used. They find out how the name is spelled correctly, and they will take that identity of the person. So we hear about that often from our friends who are incarcerated, that their identity has been stolen. So we have to work a lot with folks around cleaning up their identity and then getting banked, because the banks won't do business with anyone who has, if you will, contaminated credit history.
And participating in this, what is it? Is there a local HSBC component, or does the HSBC bank supply more than just money? Or is there any kind of personal relationship between the institutions and your program?
This is a very unique program in that the bank actually provides us with enough resources to provide a stipend to organizations who buy refreshments and door prizes and the like for the local participants. And that way, participants can come in and feel at home while learning at the same time. The local component, the partnerships that we have with the HSBC affiliates, come in the form of volunteers. HSBC sends volunteers to our workshops.
Are they employees of
the employees? Yes, they have a very robust volunteer program, and their volunteers volunteer to go to certain locations throughout the countries, and the bank pays for their travel and also pays for their accommodations while they're visiting perhaps a site in Florida or a site in Oregon or a site in Texas. Most of the volunteers come from a location that's close in proximity to the site. However, we are well aware of sites who receive volunteers clear across country. Someone could be in California and have someone from Chicago to visit their site to join in with the training.
Can you give an example of perhaps some of your most innovative strategies that local people have undertaken to educate their constituents?
Most of our participants are women, and we are constantly challenged with getting men to come to these types of financial education events. So what we try to do is incentivize the program where women will actually bring their husbands, coercion or however, to the workshop. And, of course, the person will get additional incentive for bringing their husband. Now, when you talk about folks like Antoine Diggs and Gary Wyatt, they actually take the program to the prisons. Ironically, the greatest number of men that we serve are either in halfway houses or prisons. For whatever reason, we cannot get a large number of men from the general population to attend these workshops. So the innovations that the sites use, such as Gary in Ohio and Antoine in New York, they took it to the prisons and the halfway houses, and there were the men.
Perhaps I remember someone once said that when the difference between a man takes a car to be repaired and when a woman takes a car to repair, because if the mechanic tells the customer that they need all these extravagant repairs, the man will assume that he should know that's correct and not challenge it. But a woman will say, listen, I don't know anything about this. All I know is I came to get the oil changed. And now you want to charge me for all this other stuff, and I'm not paying for all this other stuff, so just fix what I brought it in to fix. And so maybe some of this is at work here, because men with their little macho attitudes assume, well, they're smarter, they should know this, and I'm just wondering if this isn't at work here.
We hear that often. In fact, some men that attend the workshops, after a while, they would get up and walk out, and you would ask, well, why did you walk out? And they say, well, I already know this stuff. You know, but then if you listen to the wife would say how much trouble they're in financially in terms of not doing the budget, not having the bank, having to use the local outlets that have a Western Union operation going on to do their banking. So the women are telling a different story than the men who are attending the workshops. That's for sure. And also we have some innovations that are going on elsewhere in the country. We're a very diverse project. For example, we have sites in Arizona. Teen Challenge of Arizona reaches out to recovering addicts. We have El Paso Collaborative for Community and Economic Development in El Paso, Texas. They reach out primarily to Spanish-speaking population, as does our organization in Portland, Oregon, who It's a part of Catholic Charities that also reaches out to a Spanish population. So we're a very diverse project, and each site has their own personality, their own centrality, and they have different innovations. David Dobkins in Arizona, he drives from Tucson to Phoenix to deliver workshops, and he goes where the people are to deliver the workshops, and that's what we like about the sites that are working with us. They come out of their ivory tower, and they go into the community. Some of these communities are in basement of churches. We have to almost open up every window just to get some light down in the basement. We may be in a community room where we have to put up a sheet on the wall in order to project the PowerPoint presentation that we have. So these organizations, they are dedicated, they're motivated, they're enthusiastic about what they're doing, and they're trying to create a learning environment that makes folks feel comfortable with coming in and learning about some of the greatest fears, because many people who come through the doors of a financial literacy workshop are faced with many fears, fears about the unknown, fears about the credit report, they haven't pulled it in a decade, fears about going to the bank and starting an account because of some infraction that may have taken place 5 to 6 years ago. So there are a lot of fears, and so what happens, folks become paralyzed. We help folks to become unparalyzed, you know, by equipping them with information that they can use.
And I guess some of those, in terms of credit reports, like myself, I remember you see these commercials, freecreditreport.com, and there's this big commercial. And then when you click on it, it isn't so free.
No,
it is one of the worst bait and switch games that I've seen on television, freecreditreport.com, these young men playing their little guitar and being in a hoopty and being ridiculed by some girls. It is one of the biggest cons, because once you click on the site, in order to get your free credit report, you got to register for something or another, and it costs $35 a month to register. I did it myself before I realized that I was obligating myself to some expenditures of $39 a month, and I had to sort of get out of that to cancel it. And so I think a lot of these kind of, I think, really bad, perhaps. Tell me what happens about the expense of getting their credit report. I guess HSBC has been helpful with that also.
Mm-hmm. First and foremost, we remind folks that Congress passed and the President signed into law the Fair and Accurate Credit Transaction Act of 2003. Where folks can go to myannualcreditreport.com and receive a free annual report with no strings attached whatsoever. However, those reports do not contain the credit score. HSBC provides us with credit codes that we give to participants as an incentive or a door prize that would allow them to sign into Equifax, Experian websites and retrieve their credit score. And then the person can take a look at their credit score and make a determination as to where they actually fit among the scheme of things. We encourage folks to have a credit score of 700 and above. And so that is a very useful tool that HSBC provides to us, and it's a great incentive to keep people coming back.
And so that's how many people have you reached over what period of time? In the course of a year, how many workshops do you conduct, and how many people come out to these workshops?
Well, I'm so happy to answer that question. This year alone, we have served 6,154 people. On an annual basis, we reach out to over 5,000 people. And since we've been keeping a close tab of the numbers of people who walk through our doors, we have trained over 22,400 people. And so we're very excited about having been able to reach out to that number of people. And many people come back and report of the life changes that they have experienced as a result of attending the workshops.
That was my next question. How do you know you're effective? You know, funders today, whether it's mm-hmm. a bank or lending institution or foundation, more and more they're looking critically at programs like yours and asking, what is the bang for the buck? What impact are you having on people? What impact is the program having, and how do you know it's effective?
Couple of ways. First, our evaluator will use our sign-in sheets, and 6 months after a person has completed the course, they would place a courtesy call to the individual just to have a casual conversation about their experience months ago and how did that experience impact their life. Folks are reporting that for the very first time they put a credit report, for the very first time as a family they completed a budgeting activity, that for the very first time they did something about the identity theft done by a family member. So we get testimony after testimony through our evaluations, and also we ask the local sites to take testimony from folks who walk in and report the good work that has been done over the months. And so we get copies of testimonies from the various sites that are handwritten by individuals, and those things attest to the impact that the project is having on individuals.
Well, that sounds great. And you mentioned the word families. You ever get whole families coming in?
We get the mom, we get the dad, and we ask the sites to have space for child care. Most sites will have a volunteer or someone who will receive a very low stipend to serve as a child care provider. So we'll have the kids in one room showing them a financial cartoon, if you will, and we have mom and pop in the training room talking to them about family budgeting.
Boom to tune.
Yes, indeed. And then we bring them all together to have lunch.
And so how many people, again, have you served over the course of this program?
Over 22,000 people, and we're very excited about that.
22,000 people. Well, thanks so much for sharing that with us. We are talking about financial crisis in low and middle income communities with Charles Perry. Charles is the director of the Center for Neighborhood Enterprise Financial Literacy Education Program. I'm Bob Woodson, president of the Center for Neighborhood Enterprise, and we will return after these messages.